This week on Vaticano, as we prepare for World Youth Day in Lisbon, we sit down for an interview at the Symposium on Popular Piety in Rome and learn about the incredible history of the Swiss Guards. Vaticano starts now. On July the 29th, the Catholic Church traditionally celebrates the solemnity of the two apostles, Peter and Paul. At the Holy Mass in St. Peter's Basilica, Pope Francis blessed the palliums for the newly appointed archbishops. The pallium is a stole woven from lamb's wool that's given to those archbishops who head an ecclesiastical province. On this day, a total of 32 archbishops from 20 countries were given the pallium after Holy Mass. Francis explained the symbolism of the pallium, which is a sign of communion with the Church of Rome. Therefore, he said, it is the bishop's task to proclaim the gospel everywhere, in communion with the entire universal church. In his homily, the Holy Father recalled the tireless missionary activity of the two apostles and emphasized their importance for the church.
Quando evangelizziamo, restiamo evangelisti.
Whenever we evangelize, we are ourselves evangelized. The word that we bring to others comes back to us, for however much we give to others, we ourselves receive much more. This is something necessary also for the church in our day, to put preaching at the center, to be a church that never tires of repeating, "To me, life is Christ," and "Woe to me if I do not proclaim the gospel." A church that needs to preach, even as we need oxygen to breathe. A church that cannot live without sharing with others the embrace of God's love and the joy of the gospel.
At the end of the pontifical office, Pope Francis also welcomed a delegation from the Ecumenical Patriarchate, sent to Rome by Patriarch Bartholomew. A new sculpture from the Canadian artist Timothy Schmaltz was blessed and presented in front of the Church of St. Francis in the northern Italian city of Schio on June the 29th on the occasion of the Feast of St. Peter the Apostle, the patron saint of the city. The Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, blessed the sculpture that evokes the figure of St. Josephine Bakhita with the objective of raising public awareness to the phenomenon of human trafficking.
St. Bakhita is from Schio, Italy. Now that's close to Venice, and I think it is the most ideal location. It's like doing a sculpture of St. Francis for Assisi. And the hope is that this will bring focus and attention to St. Bakhita. Already that area is becoming a pilgrimage site to this saint, and this sculpture I think will bring more people to her.
"Let the oppressed go free" is the title of the sculpture that's inspired by a passage from the Bible, from which Schmaltz took the name of his work. The day before the presentation of the sculpture in Schio, Timothy Schmaltz met with the Pope and presented his new sculpture.
And I knew that he loves St. Bakhita and he's so much concerned about human trafficking in the world. So to see him with the small sculpture was just absolutely amazing. And to have it blessed was amazing too.
In front of the new sculpture, Cardinal Pietro Parolin invited everyone to ask St. Bakhita, who is the patron saint of human trafficking victims, to help liberate us from this slavery. The prelate emphasized how Pope Francis continues to call for greater attention to the indifference with which we see reality, especially that tied to suffering and pain. The sculpture is connected to Angels Unawares, another work created by Schmaltz, which was installed in St. Peter's Square in 2019. In both of the works, the Canadian artist expresses human vulnerability. Angels Unawares, in fact, sheds light on the suffering and lack of protection of migrants, while Let the Oppressed Go Free gives visibility to the problem of the trafficking of human beings.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis and the Vatican.
Pope Francis has named Archbishop Victor Manuel Fernandez to lead the dicastery for the doctrine of the faith. The Argentine succeeds Cardinal Luis Ladaria Ferrer, who has been prefect of the dicastery since 2017. Fernandez, almost 61, will take up his new post in the middle of September, the Vatican said. Italian Cardinal Matteo Suppi has recently returned from his peace mission from Moscow. This comes after his meeting with representatives of Ukraine in Kiev in early June. In the Russian capital, Suppi met with Orthodox Patriarch Cyril, who is considered a supporter of Russian President Vladimir Putin. This was Cyril's first meeting with a direct Vatican representative since the outbreak of the war in February 2022. Pope Francis accepted the resignation of embattled Bishop Rick Sticker of Knoxville, Tennessee. Sticker was investigated by the Vatican for mismanagement of his diocese. He's also named in a 2022 lawsuit accusing him of protecting a seminarian accused of multiple counts of rape. The pontiff named Archbishop Shelton Faber of Louisville, Kentucky, as the Diocese of Knoxville's apostolic administrator until a new bishop is appointed. In an interview with a United Arab Emirates newspaper, Pope Francis spoke about interfaith cooperation, peace building, and his 2019 document on human fraternity, Fratelli Tutti. Pope Francis, in response to a protester's burning of a Quran in Sweden on June 28th, said, "I have been outraged and disgusted at such deeds." He went on and said, "Any book considered sacred by its people must be respected out of respect for those who believe in it." In his monthly video message, Pope Francis calls on people to pray especially for Eucharistic life during the month of July. The Holy Father says in a two-minute video, "Let's pray that Catholics place at the center of their lives the Eucharistic celebration, which transforms human relationships and opens up an encounter with God and their brothers and sisters." Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. I'm Rudolf Gehrig for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. With over 20 centuries of history, and known as the city built on seven hills, the Portuguese capital of Lisbon is getting ready to host World Youth Day. In the headquarters of World Youth Day, staff are busy preparing to welcome pilgrims from every continent.
We have different topics, so different also continents. We are distributed by different continents and also movements, congregations. This team are for the visa.
For everyone, this is our main goal, to answer the Pope's appeal to have at least one pilgrim from all the countries of the world.
Bishop Américo Aguiar is the Bishop of Lisbon and is responsible for the tone and theme of World Youth Day.
Estamos a 90 dias hoje.
When you think of how close World Youth Day is, it's like a defibrillator. You feel a shock at the heart when you think of how many days are left. But we are really looking forward to welcoming young people from all over the world for a meeting with Pope Francis. But above all, we are excited about them meeting with the living Christ. That is why we are very much looking forward to the arrival of the big day.
Organizers are predicting that somewhere between 1 and 2 million people will attend. A realistic figure to many, too optimistic to others. There have also been concerns about accommodating this amount of people in a city of only 500,000 residents. The mayor of Lisbon, Carlos Moedas, has a simple message. Worry about that later.
My advice would be, come, we'll find you a solution. I mean, there's a lot of families that are opening their places. We are opening schools places that people can sleep and stay. And if there's one characteristic of the Portuguese people, it's that people like to host foreign people. They like to receive. They like to have people at home.
The cost of hosting World Youth Day is estimated to be over 100 million euro. 80 million will be funded by the Catholic Church, and a further 30 million will be given by the Portuguese state. The staging area for the Pope's final Mass originally had a price tag of 5.6 million euro, which was then revised down to 2.9 million. The huge cost involved in hosting the event is something that has come under severe scrutiny.
So basically we made different choices. Before it was going to be taller, like higher, the structure, and we had to bring it down a bit so that the cost will go down as well.
Everything costs a lot of money. The stage, the logistics, everything. The cost is significant, but we are working at a reduced cost. But this is something that the Portuguese state believes in, and the church believes in, and the Holy See believes in. This is an investment that will have a return, and of course, not just an economic return, but more importantly, a spiritual return in terms of changing the lives of these young people.
But regardless of the cost and huge logistical challenge this will be to Portugal, young Portuguese Catholics are hoping it will be a special opportunity for their country to help other young Catholics grow in their faith.
I think it's going to be great. I think deep down we are so excited to have Catholics from all over the place and non-Catholics who also are coming in our country.
Well, we have to remember the basic things. Christ said, if you want to follow me, pick your cross and follow me. So follow him. If he says go to Portugal, then come to Portugal. It's not that hard.
It's not that big of a cross, no.
Yeah. It isn't, yeah.
It's not that big. If you live in Portugal knowing truly in yourself that Christ is my king, Christ is King of Kings, you have your life done.
Your family and your neighbors will see Christ in your face and will be obvious, and you'll be this instrument to get the gospel across.
And for Bishop Americo, he's confident World Youth Day will be a transformative experience for young people, no matter where they come from.
It doesn't matter if I'm black or white, from the north or from the south. If we have different sensitivities, if we like different sports, different politics, I'm left, I'm right. No, we must recognize this as wealth. And knowing this as a wealth, we're going to build a world that is different. And the journey in Lisbon can help do just that, a chance to build a new future. This could be the profound result of World Youth Day here in Lisbon.
Profunda da Jornada Mundial da Juventude de Lisboa.
On June the 16th, a symposium on popular piety was held in Rome. The event was organized by the German association Fundatio Christiana Virtus EV. On the sidelines of the conference, EWTN spoke with Father Karl Wallner, National Director of the Pontifical Mission Agency, Missio Austria.
You have come to Rome for the symposium, which is about the topic of popular piety. Why is this topic so important to you?
According to Pope Francis, but also according to Pope Benedict and all his predecessors, popular piety is an instrument to lead people to God. Popular piety is something totally missionary. Pope Francis, at the beginning of his pontificate, spoke a lot about how important popular piety is. It's often ridiculed. Praying the rosary, going on pilgrimage, processions, private revelations, this is all part of popular piety. In other words, all these things that the people love. That's why it's called popular piety. These are things that have a great missionary potential. And that's why they're so important for me, because I have to do with the missions at the papal mission agencies.
You travel a lot in this task, also internationally. Does popular piety in Germany and Austria differ from that in other countries?
We're basically more cooled down. We're Europeans. That's quite clear. That's also good. So I can't imagine that people dance at a church service in Frankfurt the way that they do in Congo, as I experienced there. That's not our mentality. Popular piety also corresponds to the mentalities and cultures. And that's why it's also very important, because it inculturates faith.
But is there also something that is common to all the different international forms of popular piety?
There are things that are, of course, generally good Catholic. For example, the rosary, the devotions, the veneration of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. So there are many things where the sensual is also addressed. Sometimes I wish that we in our European countries would catch up a bit with the devotion and emotional enthusiasm that I experience in the South. We lack that a bit. And that's why popular piety is a bit of a reheating of a rather cold form of faith that we've developed here in Europe.
It all starts with a natural curiosity that young people also have, and perhaps also with a certain sensationalism. You've been working with young people for a long time now. How do you realize this young person's curiosity turns into a real relationship with God?
We are only God's servants. We're not the religious manipulators who demagogically force people to do something. We only create an atmosphere in which the heart opens. When I was a youth pastor, I used to say to Jesus in prayer, "Now you have to take over. You have to work." We've done everything. We've brought the young people here. We're making sure that the atmosphere is right. We're creating this environment, but you have to touch them. You have to meet these people. Our main problem today is what the church does is such a religious activity, and often the personal relationship with God is missing. It's a form of culture and so on, but you're not really a believer until God has touched you, when you've experienced something, when you've had the feeling that you're not praying into an abstract black hole, but that He answers. In 2016, I was very surprisingly appointed National Director of the Pontifical Mission Societies in Austria. And at the first General Assembly, where I met the other 128 national directors, the then National Director of Malta stood up and said, "The church must send, or it will end." I had goosebumps at the time, so I've quoted that phrase many times. The church must be missionary, as Pope Francis wants, as all the popes of the last century wanted, or the church will no longer exist.
Alle Päpste des letzten Jahrhunderts wollten, oder es wird sie nicht mehr geben.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. Fiercely and faithfully. This is the motto of the smallest and most famous army in the world, the Pontifical Swiss Guard. An armed corps born more than 500 years ago, it was on the 22nd of January, 1506, when the warrior Pope Julius II decided to surround himself with soldiers to defend himself against the attacks of his adversaries. To do so, he chose 150 men from Switzerland because they were considered to be brave warriors and loyal to the Pope. Even today, Swiss guards are chosen according to certain characteristics. They must be no less than 174 centimeters tall. That's 5 feet, 8.5 inches. Be Catholic and have a good reputation. Being a Swiss citizen. As recruits, be under 30 years of age and have completed some military service in Switzerland. Be unmarried, if non-officers. The most tragic and at the same time most heroic event that the Swiss Guards have faced was the attack of the 6th of May, 1527. When Charles V's Spanish troops and the Lansquenets sacked the Vatican. In this dramatic event, known as the Sack of Rome, only 42 of the 189 Swiss Guards managed to save Pope Clement VII. They helped the Pope escape through the so-called Passetto, a secret passageway that runs along the Vatican walls and leads from St. Peter's Basilica to Castel Sant'Angelo. To this day, the Swiss guards still have the key to that hidden escape route. This is the reason why every year on the anniversary of the sack of Rome, the new recruits take their solemn oath in the Cortile di San Damaso, the St. Damasus courtyard in the Vatican. The Swiss guards are essentially the Pope's bodyguards and ensure the security of his residence. The most striking thing in the eyes of visitors is undoubtedly their distinctive uniform, consisting of no fewer than 154 separate pieces. Born in the first half of the 20th century, the uniforms of the Swiss Guards tell the story of their birth. In fact, the ochre and blue colors of the Della Rovere family and the red of the Medici represent the lineages of the popes who welcomed this very special army, which in the course of history has also earned the nickname Defenders of the Freedom of the Church.